Coming to you from the bottom of Lake Agassiz, welcome to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. The first weekend in August of 2014, which means coming down the pipe, we've got a couple of things. As people are fishing, that's the fun thing about August, is there's still a lot of fishing to be had. You get into, I guess there's no real specific calendar date for now begins the dog days of summer. And the dog days of summer, as I'll explain in other programs, is more just a philosophy and a reaction to the mid part of summer than it really is anything in particular, any designated meteorological or, you know, calendar moon phase type stuff. The dog days is not any of that. But while people are fishing and enjoying summer vacation, camping, hiking, birding, there's some things starting to pop up, like the fall crow season opening up next Saturday morning. I don't know how many people will be lining the parking lots. The gas stations will be crammed on Saturday morning for the fall crow season opener, but it does signify the first opening day of 2014, the Swan permit application deadline coming up on the 13th, the early Canada goose season. Sure. Plenty of hunting topics to cover while you're out fishing. And when we talk about hunting and looking maybe with one eye cocked to what's coming down the pipe, we actually are in the middle and at the end of the pheasant brood runs, the upland game brood runs, counting sharp-tailed grouse, doves, partridge. But at the same time, while we're counting those, we've got the numbers from the spring crow counts. And it's an equation that comes together to give us a snapshot of what you'll find when you head outdoors this fall. And we have habitat conditions, we have weather conditions, and then we have the statistical counts. And our spring crow counts. Well, let's bring in Stan Cohn, the Upland Game Supervisor for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And Stan, let's explain what crowing counts are for people that are interested in pheasant numbers, hunting numbers across North Dakota.
We have about a 120-mile route set up throughout the state. And essentially what we're listening for is the number of pheasants we hear crowing. Kind of two objectives of this crowing count survey. The first one is it gives us our first opportunity to kind of take a look at how pheasants came through the winter. And then the second objective, of course, is to get an index into the number of roosters that are out on the landscape in the spring. It's kind of a start on an estimate on our breeding population. And that's one of the first components that we kind of need to take a look at if we're going to get some idea of what the fall population might be down the road. On these 20-mile routes, there's 10 stops. Observers start at the beginning, of course, and run 2 miles. They get out and they listen for 2 minutes and they record the number of pheasants they hear crowing. Back in the vehicle, drive another 2 miles and out and listen for 2 minutes. So they end up with 10 stops over this 20-mile segment.
So really, when you break it down in rudimentary terms, it's a survey, a spring survey of adult male pheasants.
That's correct. It's a survey of adult male pheasants. The routes are the same, and we try to keep the consistency with our observers the same so that they run the same route every year. And then when the numbers come in to me, essentially what we do is just take a look at the number of pheasants they hear crowing, compare that to last year and then previous years, and then it gives us an index on breeding males in the population during the spring.
I always find it quite interesting to take a step back and look at maybe your last day that you were in the field, and you realize that there was some nasty snowstorms, there was some nasty cold stretches. You get into the spring of the year, pow, another snowstorm, boom, another cold spell, and there's been hunting mortality that's taken place. There's been predators. There's the potential for lack of food and the habitat. There's a lot of things that go into it from the time you're done hunting until the spring. But the number of birds that make it through the spring isn't, you're really like, okay, we got these birds in the spring. This is what we can expect for the fall.
That's correct. Our breeding population index with the crowing count is strictly just a breeding index on the number of males. The best survey that we have to take a look at what the fall population is our late summer roadside counts, or our brood surveys. That way our folks get out and they actually run the same 20 mile segments that they do during the crowing count, but at this time they record the number of hens that they see, the number of broods that they see, and the number of chicks in the brood. And of course that gives us an idea of the number of birds that were hatched and the survivability up to the time that they observe these broods, and then we can kind of get an idea of what the number of young chicks are going to be coming into the population in the fall. And that's actually the survey that gives us our best read into what that fall population is going to be.
He's Stan Cohn. I'm Doug Lear. You're listening to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO, talking about the pheasant crow counts from the spring, tabulated and digested now while the summer brood surveys are taking place. It's kind of like a leapfrog type of a situation that takes place. But from those crow counts, and you do them in different transects and regions, you can get a better understanding of how bad the winter conditions were in a particular section of North Dakota, can't you, Stan?
We've broken down the state into four pheasant districts, essentially the Northwest, Northeast, Southwest, and Southeast. And they were kind of combined based on habitat and population of pheasants at that time, so that not only do we get a statewide index of both the crowing count survey and our late summer roadside counts, we can break it down into what these pheasant numbers are looking like in those four pheasant districts. And it helps hunters a little bit too, so that they get some idea that, you know, how the Southwest compares to the Northeast. But it still comes down to them taking a little initiative and getting out and actually taking a look at the area before they go out and hunt. Because even within these large blocks of the four pheasant districts, there's a lot of variation in terms of how the numbers of pheasants look based on what the cover is out there.
Dan Cohn, the Upland Game Supervisor for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Habitat loss, we've talked about it a lot. Can biologists see the effects of loss of CRP showing up in surveys that are being done on the wildlife populations? Stan Cohn answers that question next on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear. Still to come on this weekend edition, we will be giving you a Central Dakota Outdoors report with Pat Stockdale. CJ Johnson will be updating you on what's going on in Minnesota as well, both regular features, because it gives you a little better idea of where people are going, what they're doing, and what they're finding when they get outdoors. Feel free to email me. It's outdoorslive@gmail.com, outdoorslive@gmail.com. This program is podcast. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris for doing that for us and you, kfgo.com, and we blog throughout the week at kfgo.com as well. So any way you want the outdoors is waiting for you at kfgo.com, or as you listen right now. Stan Cohn is the Upland Game Supervisor for the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And talking about those podcasts, if you missed the beginning, we talked about crow counts, what is done, what they show game and fish biologists, putting the pieces of the puzzle together as you prepare for the fall hunting season. And that is one of the pieces. Right now, as we speak, wrapping up the summer brood count survey work. So you get that done. You bring the numbers back to headquarters, you crunch the numbers, and the biologists look through it, compare it to past data, and then that gives you a little better idea of what you're going to find in the field coming up in October and November. One thing you're going to find less of, Stan, is CRP. Habitat loss in North Dakota continues, doesn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, our pheasant population kind of peaked during that period of roughly 2007 to 2010. And that was the time period when, not only did we have good amounts of native grasslands on the landscape, but we were looking at roughly 3.2 million acres of CRP on the landscape. And of course, when you start putting that type of cover in areas where pheasants are living, you're going to get some really good nesting and brooding habitat out there, and our pheasants really did respond. But since 2010, we're slowly starting to see our CRP acreage being removed from the landscape, and unfortunately a lot of that's coming out of some of our better pheasant range, and that's no doubt going to have an effect on our population of pheasants.
Well, let's take a look at the numbers. We've talked so much about what you do, what you're finding in terms of habitat, but the spring crow count spring pheasant crow count numbers for North Dakota, Stan?
This spring, I guess just to back up a little bit, you know, when I took a look at our harvest survey, of course we asked hunters to send in reporting forms of parts collection effort, and when I took a look at the number of juveniles versus adults in the harvest, I could tell last year we didn't have a very good production. It was cold and wet, and we just didn't get a real good hatch, and a lot of those broods that did hatch, the chicks didn't make it into flight stage and into the fall. And so I kind of had an indication that our numbers this spring weren't going to be real strong. But when these crowing count numbers have come in, it looks like in all four of our pheasant districts, our numbers are going to be up a little bit, ranging from about 2% in the northwest part of the state to 9% down in the southeast. And then the northeast and the southwest, the crowing count numbers are up about 7%. So there's not a real jump there. And in many instances, you could probably say that our crowing count numbers are going to be or are real comparable to what they were last year. And so we don't have a real strong breeding population, you know, as we did back in the mid-2000s. But our numbers are not too bad. We're still about 60% above our long-term average in the crow count observations. So I think, you know, if we have a good production year this year, and right now we've got a lot of young pheasant broods running around out on the landscape, and the cover's not too bad. As long as we get away from any major detrimental weather systems coming through, our numbers shouldn't look too bad this fall. That's what it looks like right now. As I say, we will have a little better information as we get into our late summer brood surveys and get an idea of just how many of those young chicks have survived from hatching up until that flight stage in late August. But right now, conditions have been a lot better than they were last year. We've had some fairly dry weather. I've had a few weather systems go through, but nothing real major. And those hens, of course, will do everything possible to brood those chicks to try to get them through until late summer. So kind of keep our fingers crossed, and things are not looking too bad at the present time.
He's Stan Cohn. I'm Doug Lear. You're listening to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. And Stan, I know you know game and fish biologists, hunters, fisheries biologists that love to hunt. That's one thing that people got to understand is we've got a lot of people working for game and fish that are North Dakota natives, Midwest natives, and they all live here in North Dakota. And they enjoy fishing. They enjoy hunting. So they want to have as much optimism going into late summer as everybody else. And it looks like, you know, maybe things coming together should provide a little bit of boost of good news when we get the brood run data summarized and crunched, which is still a ways off, but it's got some promise. There's definitely some hope in the air, isn't there, Stan?
Well, I hope so too. I think a lot of folks are kind of anxious to see pheasant numbers kind of bounce back a little bit this year.
And that is Stan Cohn with a little snapshot of what the pheasant population was like pre-breeding, pre-hatching. As we speak, brood runs are about halfway through, where our biologists are out across the state, fanned out across the state, counting the chicks behind little mother hen. And that's really where you're going to get the snapshot. That's where you're going to get a much better indication of what the fall population, the hunting population, is going to be like. This is a good indication, spring crow counts being up. But as you heard Stan say, and we've tried to reiterate, there's still a lot more data that's going to need to be crunched. We don't really get that real clear picture of what the fall population is going to be like really until the end of August or the first part of September. Before we get there, the pronghorn antelope applications are due coming up on Wednesday. We've got just a few days left to decide. Are you going to put in for unit 4A? That's the only unit that's going to be open. 250 pronghorn tags available, and it's split into a bow-only portion and a gun bow season. Big thing is, decide if you're going to put in for 4A. If you don't put in, you're not going to lose your preference points. If you've built up preference points from the last time that we had a season back in 2009, and you're like, I've never hunted 4A, I'm not sure about landowners or places to hunt. If you decide not to hunt this year, you will not lose the preference points that you built up. If you put in and don't get drawn, you will accumulate your preference point for that season. If you get drawn, You can hunt the bow season August 29th to September 28th. And if you don't harvest a pronghorn in that season, you can hunt during the gun season, October 3rd through October 19th. So the good news is the pronghorn population is beginning to turn the corner. And in Unit 4A Extreme Southwestern North Dakota, if you didn't know that you can go south and west from Marmoth, yes, it is possible. The pronghorn numbers down there, the population objective around 1,500 up to 1,656, giving you a limited opportunity to put your name in the hat, and you have to do that by midnight on Wednesday. This is the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. A North Dakota Outdoors Report with Pat Stockdale is next. And welcome back to the weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Doug Lear, the first weekend in August, and glad to have you climbing aboard as we still lock in to fishing in August. But out of the corner of our eye, we know that the kids' fall sports practices are beginning. We've got some schools that'll be starting. Actually, I've got some strong ties to Napoleon. Both my mom and dad both grew up in Napoleon and have plenty of cousins and uncles and aunts and relatives and some friends that live in the Logan County vicinity, and all my ties to Cullum, Lemoore, my enjoyment of Wishick sausage, and I absolutely love the drive from Napoleon to Wishick. But school starts in Napoleon on August 14th, which is just after the fall crow season that begins on August 9th. And the swan application deadline coming up on August 13th. Before all of that, as we've mentioned, you've got until Wednesday to decide if you're going to put in for a pronghorn antelope application. And I've talked about it a little bit more, but it bears a little bit of conversation in that debate that I've mentioned about hunters deciding whether or not they're going to put in with the preference points. But I also think of it in terms of, you know, the pronghorn antelope is a native species of North Dakota, the fastest land mammal in North America. For many people, it's a symbol of the West. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Fargo is called like the gateway to the West or whatever. One of the many, every city and every town's got their own little moniker to it. But what's your symbol of North Dakota? There was the debate going on with the next license plate on it with a buffalo. And you know the historical connotation to buffalo in North Dakota and Lewis and Clark and the Native Americans and the subsistence that buffalo provided. But you don't have buffalo anywhere other than southwestern North Dakota, at least with pronghorn. Pronghorn antelope, you have an occasional sighting in the Red River Valley and in Sargent County and Emmons County and up into Ward County. And for some reason, for me, the modern day symbol of wildlife in the West is the pronghorn. I know there's people that love to see the picture of the rooster pheasant busting out of the cattail slough. Well, the rooster pheasant is the Chinese chicken. I would take as a symbol of North Dakota, I'd take the sharp-tailed grouse ahead of the ringneck pheasant. Maybe not the Hungarian partridge. The prairie chicken, sure. We don't have a lot of prairie chickens. We had a short window of about 3 or 4 years where we did have a stable enough prairie chicken population to allow a hunt in the modern day. It's been about 5 years on that as well. But you find your way down into the Cheyenne grasslands south of Highway 46 towards Lisbon, and you see native prairie, and you can find prairie chickens. And that, I think if I'm not mistaken, Lewis and Clark maybe kind of alluded to them as prairie sage or sage hens or prairie grouse, whatever you wanted to call them. Pronghorn in the West, prairie chickens in the East. That's what I hang my hat on for native symbols of North Dakota. The Western meadowlark, you bet. The flickertail, not a problem. But there's something to be said about the game animal of pronghorn And you, as a hunter, have a choice. If you'd like to throw your name in the hat, make sure you have that in by Wednesday at midnight. Don't wake up on Thursday morning and hear Doug Lear and Tom Wynn and go, oh, I'll throw my name in that. It's going to be too late. And it is right on time, though, to get you updated on what's going on across the prairies of North Dakota with the Central Dakota Outdoors Report. You read her work in Dakota Country Magazine, Minnesota Outdoor News, and various other places. Pat Stockdale is a respected outdoors communicator, and she connects with us each week. Pat, what's cooking outdoors this week?
Welcome to the Central Dakota Outdoors Report, a look at fishing and outdoor activities throughout eastern North Dakota and the Missouri River system. Once again, we've got a broken record that anglers won't mind hearing over and over again. Devil's Lake continues producing good walleye action. Keep working structured areas in 8 to 25 feet using spinners and bottom bouncers with leeches or night crawlers. Try Pelican Lake, Minnewaukan Flats, Main Bay, or basically, really, any areas with structure. Once again, though, reports are light from Jamestown Reservoir and Spiritwood Lake, although look for Pipestem Reservoir to produce some crappie in the evening with a few perch during the day. Lake Ashtabula is also active, with anglers finding an aggressive walleye bite throughout many areas of the lake. Try spinners and bottom bouncers with night crawlers or leeches. There's some minnow success as well. Catfish remain spotty on the Red River, but success is improving, with fluctuating surface water temperatures extending their spawn. Try working the openings of holes and along the outer edges of snags. Move around to find active fish and stay on that spot with fresh bait. Suckers are producing success, but also try goldeye or frogs. The Red River in Fargo still has higher flows earlier in the week. The Cheyenne River is improving for smallmouth bass using spinner baits in shaded areas on sunny days and off the edges of the faster currents. Walleye bite continues to produce good eater fish from boats, with action coming a little deeper across Richland, Sargent, Ransom, Barnes, Lemoore, McIntosh, and Logan County lakes. Try trolling spinners tipped with minnows, leeches, or gulp on days with a nice walleye chop. Out west, the Missouri River has more angling activity north and south of Bismarck Mandan, although it seems the walleye bite has slowed a bit on Lake Oahe below the river. The tail race is also still somewhat slow, but does continue producing some catfish during the day, and a few trout are mixed in. Try night crawlers with Lindy rigs. There's also an occasional walleye from shore at night, but overall success is still somewhat slow. Lake Sakakwe is still producing walleye along the shore in 6 to 7 feet using jigs along the weed beds, but you also might want to try crankbaits in 14 to 25 feet, although there you'll want to move around to find the active fish. Some smallmouth bass and pike from shore are still being taken, but for some reason there's limited walleye success from shore, even though they're biting from the shallows from boat. Well, give it a try. And finally, over on Lake Audubon, anglers are still finding fair walleye success.
Appreciate that report. Pat Stockdale is a regular feature on the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. Up next, where are people going? What are they doing in Minnesota? CJ Johnson joins us on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And welcome back to the last cast of this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm your host, Dougler. Just a second to connect with CJ Johnson and get you updated on where people are going and what they're doing on the Minnesota side. One thing I forgot to mention when I talked about the symbols of North Dakota of the West, I'll make no apology for skipping the white-tailed deer or the mule deer. Nothing wrong with that. To me, just maybe a little bit too common. Don't get me wrong, I love seeing a picture of a nice white-tailed deer or a mule deer. Doesn't bother me whatsoever. But the thing that's different is it's a lot easier to go out and find white-tailed deer and mule deer. And white-tailed deer are so common all across North America. And pronghorn, not so much. Typically more kind of on the western edge or the eastern edge here in North Dakota. And the same thing going for prairie chickens, not quite as common. So that's why I stick with prairie chickens and pronghorns versus whitetail or mule deer. And now it's time to shift gears and take a closer look at the outdoor recreation from the Minnesota side of the river. And we call on our good friend CJ Johnson, folks. He's been covering Minnesota outdoors for his career and has a really good pulse on where people are going and what they're doing. It doesn't hurt that he is a Lisbon, North Dakota native, grew up along the banks of the beautiful Cheyenne River. And he joins us as a regular feature each week. CJ, thanks for joining us. How's things looking in Minnesota this week, my friend?
Oh, good to be here, Doug. And looking pretty darn good, by golly. And we'll take a quick look around the state real fast at some of the producing lakes, although all 10,000 kind of do. Lake of the Woods up there, Rachel Crone says fishing continues to be steady. Drifting spinner seems to be the most common method right about now for walleyes from Long Point, the Fields, Zippel Bay, and Grayston Beach. They're down about 22 to 28 feet. On Morris Point, Pine Island, and Lighthouse Gap, a little bit shallower, 10 to 24. The hot colors right now up on Lake of the Woods are hammered gold or silver, tipped with crawlers or minnows, especially on spinners and jakes. Fishing seems to fluctuate in Ely, according to the chamber up there. One day you find that you're catching limits in hours, and the next day you can't buy a bite. But as they say, you can catch some sitting on the beach. No, you can't. You got to get out there and throw a line in the water. The walleyes have been responding to spinner rigs, slowly trolled in 6 to 15 feet of water when tipped with either a leech or a crawler this time of year. Pike seem to be slamming large crankbaits or spinner baits ripped along the water in less than 10 feet of water. Nathan Campbell over in the Park Rapids says the lakes there are fat from heavy feeding on heavily abundant prey that the summer provides each year, and the weatherman promises a stable climate with temperatures averaging, 80 degrees over the course of the next few days or so. Not too hot, not too cold for the anglers. And the stability will find the fish pretty active right now. Deep sunken islands around even deeper water are good places to start your search. Jigging with a white glow jig, twister tail, and leech over these areas will put fish in the boat, according to Nathan. Deep driving shad wraps also put fish in the boat and will help you cover a lot more water if you'd like to troll. Ross Hagemeister in Ottertail Lakes Country says, happy summer finally. Okay, Ross. Water clarity is different at this season in the Ottertail Lakes Country, too. The factors have created difficult fishing for pan fishermen around the Lakes Country, but they've made walleye catching a little bit easier, believe it or not, for a lot of anglers. The biggest reason the fishing has been tough for many is because the fish are simply in different locations. Use bright colors and see how, and you might have to change them off and on in order to find them. You can try trolling some spinner baits, and you can try jigging. Again, white and silver seem to be working best of all. Beth Fisher and Wilmer, the fish are biting, the weather's awesome. She says head to Eagle Lake, Nest Lake, or Diamond Lake to catch your fill of bass. They seem to be hungry right now. Walleye are still being pulled in from 25 to 30 feet of water in Green Lake using crawlers and leeches. Now, Eagle Lake, Diamond Lake, and Lake Florida, as well as Lake Andrew, also have active walleye action right now, all of that in the Wilmer area. Becca Hart over in Detroit Lake says, the cold front that hit slowed the bite for a few days. However, walleyes are biting leeches and crawlers in 18 to 26 feet of water on most of the area lakes in the DL area. Look for a mid-lake structure to hold most of the fish. She says bass have been hitting on the deep weed edges in 11 to 16 feet of water. And dock fishing, pitching jigs and plastics, is also producing sunfish because they seem to be active in the DL area everywhere. And, Doug, you know, my childhood in Lisbon was a bit different, and I think maybe I'm in a better area right now.
Mm-hmm.
It was an area when mistakes were corrected by simply saying, do over.
Yep.
Race. That was an argument over how fast you were. It was not to have two or three best friends. Water balloons were the ultimate, and I do this, I mean this, the ultimate weapon. And, of course, nobody was prettier than Mom. Mm-hmm. Now, if you can remember most or any of these things in your childhood, I can assure you, really, you grew up in a much better area
mm-hmm.
and era. Remember, the fishing's always great. It's catching you got to work on.
Oh, no doubt about it. We appreciate your access. We appreciate the information, and we always love the words of wisdom from CJ Johnson as well. We appreciate your time. Thanks so much, CJ.
My pleasure, Doug.
Well, that's going to wrap things up for this weekend edition of Outdoors Live on the mighty 790 KFJO. A big thank you goes out to Bob Harris. He's the executive producer of the weekend edition of Outdoors Live. This program is podcast, with a big thank you going to Bob Harris for doing that. Go to KFJO.com. Not only do you get your news, weather, sports, traffic, ag, outdoors, everything you need to know at KFGO, podcasts of this program, we blog there as well. So a big thank you going to Bob Harris for helping us out with that. Email me, outdoorslive@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm Doug Lear, reminding you, as always, keep your lines tight and your powder dry. Have a great one out there.